Book of the Month on Southside Broadcasting. Podbean.com, probably the best download decision you'll ever make.
Well, it is time for Book of the Month, but not with Jenny Finch. Why? Because she co-authored the book. So Jessica Burtis has stepped into the chair's role and will be launching the programme. Go, Jessica.
All right. Puppy Brain, A Real Underdog Story by Jem Cooney and Jenny Finch. Puppy Brain is the story of a family, part people and part canine, that steps into the whirlwind of dog shows, pedigree breeding, and what it means to have puppies on the brain. Cooney and Finch's novel is the story of Liv and Petra, who begin the novel with one dog, but soon come to have five in their midst, three grown dogs and two little puppies named Woodstock and Schroeder. Not only do these puppies become quite the handful, but Liv and Petra learn how to operate in this new world.
Halfway down the country, Marcia was wondering the same thing. Her prized bitch, Susie, aka Princess Hellespont at South Force, was showing signs of coming into season, and she was faced with a difficult decision. She had intended to choose one of her own boys to sire a new litter, but that had been scheduled for later in the year when she was less busy and more likely to get some time off for the births. On the other hand, she could let nature take its course and keep Susie away from Artie and Carl and Harold, who was a gentleman, but still subject to temptation. The thought of 2 weeks suffering Susie crying and the males shouting, fighting and using every wile to get into her crate made her head ache just thinking about it. "I thought there was an injection you can get from the vet," said Jake, after listening to her long and detailed analysis of the situation. "Yeah, but that can throw the whole cycle off," said Marcia. "Tibbies can be unpredictable anyway. Some only have an annual season and some barely show, so it's easy to miss. I don't want to mess about with Susie's pattern if I can help it." "Well, I'll be around for some of the time," said Jake. "Of course, the new rugby season starts around then, but maybe the timing is good. After all, if you have puppies at home, you won't be going to shows for a bit, right?" He gave a big grin and reached out to hug her, but Marcia slipped out of his arms and scowled. "Well, actually, I'm already committed to at least five champ shows in the autumn," she said. "It all goes quiet around Christmas. That would have been perfect. I don't know what I'm going to do now." "Needn't be a big problem," said Jake. "I'll be away for a few weekends, and there's more training on a couple of evenings each week. But I said I'd be here for you, and I will. You knew I played rugby. I've always said I want to carry on for at least another couple of seasons." This was greeted with a stony silence as Marcia picked up Susie and stroked her fur. "Hey, I'm disappointed too," said Jake. "I was looking forward to having a full four-dog support posse on the touchline." "Don't be stupid," snapped Marcia. "They'd get covered in mud." Jake laughed out loud. "I realised that very early," he said. "I was just hoping to show you off to all my plug-ugly mates." Marcia sniffed in derision. "I can't see me standing around with the rest of the trophy wags," she said. "Believe me, you would stand out in any crowd, even without the posse," said Jake. "Look, we both have something that's important to us, and I don't know about you, but I think we are important too. So let's sit down and work out the best way for both of us." He slid along the couch and put a hand on her shoulder, ready to move away if necessary. There was a tense moment, and then Marcia sighed and leaned back against him. "You're a charmer," she said. "Yeah, but I'm a charmer who's sticking around if you'll have me." He planted a kiss on the top of her head. "So, puppies? No puppies? Or a fortnight of hell?" "Puppies, I think," said Marcia. "I've done it before and managed. And this time you've got some help, but I don't know if I could do the, He stopped and Marcia leaned back, amused to see he was blushing.
A phone call in the middle of the night and a request to watch a beloved Tibetan spaniel named Lucy set the beginning of our book. As a promise to Lucy's dying owner, the women agreed to take her in and, most importantly, get Lucy to have puppies of her own. This is not an easy request, as Lucy comes from a show dog background, and something that Liv and Petra have to grapple with. Despite Liv coming from a dog-loving family, she often finds herself still out of her depth, and Petra, unused to having so many pets, and sometimes nervous around dogs, must step up alongside Liv to raise the puppies together.
It was one of Barbara's bad days. It was raining, and she had no shows coming up, so two of her main occupations, long walks with the dogs, and show baths and grooming, were off. As she ate her breakfast, a tower of unopened mail sat at the far end of the table, full of menace. She knew there were vital documents hidden somewhere in the pile, but could not steel herself to start opening envelopes. The last time she had tried, the sight of a birthday card addressed to Malcolm had reduced her to tears, and with Christmas approaching, there would soon be more happy and well-meaning missives from distant relatives and old friends who did not know he was gone. There was the sound of barking from the front room, and she heaved her tired body up to investigate. Schroeder stood on the back of the couch, shouting at a pedestrian, who had the temerity to use the pavement outside. "Oh, just shut up, you little beast," she snapped, leaning over to haul him down. The dog slipped out of her grasp and stepped out of reach, staring at her with hard black eyes. As she bent further, he turned and jumped down, flicking his tail in disdain before hopping into his crate. There he sat, muzzle tilted up, the picture of defiance. Barbara slammed the door on him and went back to her breakfast, fuming at the world in general and Schroeder in particular. From the moment he arrived, he had been difficult, disobedient, disrespectful of her and the beagles, noisy and dirty. He didn't like his food, he didn't like the other dogs, and it was very obvious he didn't like her. She wondered what the hell Malcolm had ever seen in these nasty little dogs. They were arrogant, willful, and more difficult than all the beagles put together. It was all very well saying she would honour the promise they had made to her husband, but the way things were going, it was all turning out to be a huge mistake. That was when the phone rang, and Liv told her she and Petra thought maybe they should keep Woodstock. "Well, good luck with him then," she said. "I don't think Schroeder will ever make a show dog, and he was the better of the two. His mouth's still not right, and he's growing so fast I don't think he'll be within breed standard much longer. I might try him in an open show, but I'm not sure even that's a good idea. Probably a waste of time." She put the phone down and glared across the room to where Schroeder was getting restless in his crate, giving a series of barks that slowly increased in volume. He'd be loud enough to disturb all the others if left, so Barbara let him out, hustling him into the yard before loosing the beagles. As soon as he saw them coming towards him, Schroeder dived under a plant stand and stayed there until the coast was clear. On his return, he sauntered past the captive beagles, shaking his coat out and scattering pellets of earth and the odd twig on the kitchen floor.
Puppy Brain asks readers to step into the sphere of dog pageantry and breeding, which readers may be unfamiliar with. The novel deftly guides its audience through the mechanics of dog ownership and shows, allowing even the most uninitiated of readers to go through the Puppy Brain experience alongside Petra and Liv. Even those with experience in the canine world will find themselves surprised by aspects of the dog shows and the complexity of raising two independently minded puppies. The novel finds a comfortable balance between the everyday experiences of dog ownership and the jargon of dog competitions. Cooney and Finch have brought the fictional lives of these loyal pets to life, along with all the surprise, frustration, and laughter that they bring. Readers will also be able to enjoy learning more about the Tibetan Spaniel and what their little but fierce at heart breed is like, and fall in love along the way. The cast of characters in Puppy Brain, people and dogs alike, who bring a vivaciousness to the story, include English houses to Belgian manners to dog show rings. There is something for every reader to connect with. The side characters, Barbara to Marcia to Jake to Madame Michelle, represent various fragments of the dog world coalescing in a mosaic of competition and camaraderie. But at its core, this novel is the story of a family. The dynamic between Liv and Petra is comforting, and their love for their underdog will melt the heart of even the most staunchly stoic readers. But readers are to be warned, this novel isn't for the faint of heart, as the world of dog breeding might be enough to make most of us squeamish. Our authors are cousins, and both are loving dog owners. For Finch, this novel represents her first novel outside of crime fiction, as she has also penned Alex Hastings' series. For Cooney, Puppy Brain was inspired by his own experiences and as a newbie in owning dogs. Puppy Brain has all the cuteness and craziness that a book about puppies should have, and vivid relationships throughout. It adds a human aspect to many dog stories, and might appeal to any animal lover, or anyone needing a heartwarming book to curl up with on a rainy day.
Well, there we are, heartwarming book to curl up with on a rainy day. Thank you for that, Jessica. I do like the way in which you referred to, obviously, Cooney and Finch. It's like a firm of solicitors in many ways, basically, or possibly a double act from vaudeville. But we'll find out more about that as things proceed. Ian Lennox, obviously, we have reviewed your books. We've discussed them in many ways. Now is your chance for turnabout and fair play. We've listened, obviously, to Jessica's notion there. What are your thoughts on this whole experience?
Well, first, a confession. I'm a cat person. I'm selfish. I'm lazy. I don't want to take pets for walks. even less do I want to be taken for walks. And I know that if Tiddles jumps on my lap, it's just because it's the warmest place in the room. I definitely do not like having my face licked. The authors of this book, Jenny Finch and her cousin Jem Cooney, are dog people, quite obviously. And I've never met Jem, but Jenny I know because she's as a friend who reviewed, I think, three of my own books on this same programme, and who impressed me at the time as having an honest eye and a sense of organisation, an attribute which is sadly lacking in my own personality. The plot is, as has already been described, really, about two ladies who keep a promise to a dying friend. As a consequence, introduce their puppy Woodstock into the world of showing dogs. Woodstock is a willful, sprightly, lovable Tibetan spaniel who maintains the reputation of the breed as being part dog, part cat, and part monkey, apparently. Tibetan spaniels were originally brought up as danger spotters for Tibetan monks. They barked a lot to rouse the guard dogs, which are the considerably larger Tibetan mastiffs. There are no Tibetan mastiffs in the book, but that doesn't deter Woodstock from barking a lot, particularly at shows where he's surrounded by other dogs. He has one great handicap, a faulty lower jaw, though this might right itself as he gets older. As that though weren't enough, Liv and Petra discover that some of their fellow owners can be ruthless and are prepared on occasion to cheat. And then there's the odd dodgy judge who owes favours to competitors. Can Woodstock possibly succeed? Thereby hangs the tale. Now, I thought when I was reading it, I was with some trepidation because I've got literally no interest in dogs at all, apart from my experience of taping a large Great Dane, piebald Great Dane, for long walks in Canada when I stayed with my sister. And I thought, I wonder where they're going to sell this, where this will sell. And I just didn't even realise, just doing the descriptions of the book, that there's a huge niche market for them if they can get into it, at the shows themselves. Because I thought there's some description of stalls selling stuff, and at some of the big shows, I'm sure they could make quite a bit of
extraordinary. I mean, providing advice as well, which is obviously a good commercial line. I can't believe you actually used the line in your review there. Thereby hangs the tale. I mean, talk about a shaggy dog story. Honestly. Okay, let's turn back to Jessica. And in terms of characterizations and so on, who was your favorite character out of the book? I mean, I've got to say probably Schroeder for me, but what the hey?
I was a big Schroeder fan. Woodstock won me over, though, but I was a big Schroeder fan. I think, though, my favorite character, besides the puppies, of course, because they're so mischievous and adorable, would be Petra. I think because Petra was the one who was the most outside this whole sphere of dog owning and dog shows. You know, she was even a bit uneasy around dogs. And I feel like Petra was the one who surprised me by taking all of this in stride. I think if I had suddenly become, as a person who's never owned a dog before, I think if I had one, and I was comfortable with that, and then suddenly I had five, I'd be very alarmed and overwhelmed. But I think Petra took it with grace, and I think that that really made me admire her character a lot, and that surprised me.
Ian, what about yourself? Anybody that stood out?
Yeah, well, I think Liv and Petra, for me, what I liked about them was that there were two very decent people, and there was obviously a very, very tight bond between them, and I think that carried a lot of the sort of the reasoning behind the way they just move forward into this minefield that they found themselves in, and how they were able to sustain themselves.
We have the author with us, Jenny Finch. Welcome to
Oh.
your book of the month for that perspective. If I was pushed, I would say that your alter ego was actually Petra. Would that be a fair statement in terms of this? It does say part autobiographical. I kind of recognized a few characteristics, which I thought, I think Jenny's writing about herself here. Is that true?
None of the people in the book, apart from one, which is not Petra, are actually real people. They're a combination of other people, but there are definitely some elements of me in Petra. Ian, I was a cat person for 40 years, and in
Yeah.
fact, we only lost our last cat just before we moved, little Trevor. So
Right.
we've always had cats. Tibetan spaniels get on really well with cats.
Right. Oh, something else I was wondering about. The dual authorship. I know of some highly successful partnerships and teams of writers in television, like in Friends, Monty Python, Blackadder. I think there was a people did that, and Galton Simpson wrote Hancock, but not so many in write novels, and I was wondering how it worked out. I thought what might have happened, I guess this is just obviously a guess, that you discussed the project in great detail, the two of you. You worked out, you must have come to some conclusion that you're going to write three books instead of one. And then you worked out the plots and the characters around that. And then I guess it would be you who did the actual writing, because the writing through the book, the whole novel, is, I would say, would be had been written by one person. Although what may have happened is that one of you wrote the book, one of you wrote the chapters, and then the other one read it, discussed it with you. But I'm just wondering if that was what happened.
That's pretty well what happened, yes. I let Jem put his name on the book first because he couldn't believe he'd have his name on a book. He thought it was wonderful.
But
He's so made up about that. He's going to
was his
take
idea?
more of a
Wasn't it
back
his
seat.
idea originally? Wasn't
We met and we talked, and he met my dogs, and he told me some of his stories, and I told him some of mine, and he said,
all
"You know,
right.
we should be writing a book about this. You write books. We could write a book." And so
Oh,
we wrote a book. I did the bulk of the writing. He gave me a few of the phrases and the notes and a lot of good stories.
yes.
The other two, he's probably going to take more of a back seat. I mean, it's show season and horse season coming up. He's going to be very busy. He's got a very good stables he needs to look after. So I'll probably do more of it. But he was just so thrilled. I said, "Yeah, of course you can go on first, Jim. Yeah, no problem." He's a good bloke.
We continue this viva in many ways, where Jenny is not defending her text because it doesn't need to be defended. Jenny, any Jessica, any questions from yourself for Jenny?
I would have to say, I think the whole part of it too that was so different for me was dog shows. I think that this is such an interesting behind the scenes look at dog shows. So how much experience do you have with them, and is it something that you're really into?
No,
No.
the true bits about the book, I mean, Jem has done dog shows. He's a judge as well. We did 12 shows with our little dog. 12.
That's a lot.
That was
How did
it.
it go?
Oh, 12 over 2 years. No, most people will do 12 or 20 in a season. They'll do one or two every weekend, because you've got to get to a certain level to qualify for crufts, and that's all they care about. People try all their lives to qualify for crufts. Now, the qualifying for crufts thing, we actually did with our dog, and we did it. Crufts was his 12th show, so the crufts section is completely true. It's pretty well based on what happened, although you've got different characters in there. Most of the events happened either to us or to Jem. It was quite extraordinary. And having done that, you can't go any further. And so at last we can go, enough. I
Yeah.
have shown one of our dogs twice in little open shows. And apart from that, no. We the dog showing world, I think I portrayed quite well, is a shark pool. And
It seems to
absolutely,
be.
people really, really care about it. Yes.
It felt very intense. There was
Hello, Ian.
definitely.
Jessica, you say it's quite intense.
I think, I think
Yeah, even in.
Keep going, Jessica. I think Jenny's slightly
Okay.
lagging behind, basically. It's all right. We'll catch her up, basically. It's all good. Carry on, Jess.
I think that the emphasis that you placed on how some people will only see their dogs as a means to an end, and kind of the characters as horror that some people in the competition world only see their dog as being useful if they win competitions was very sad, but I think that that's probably very true. So it was very nice having our viewpoint from characters who are so passionate about loving their dogs as family and as precious little animals. I think that that made it more approachable.
Thank you. Yes, I mean even Madame Michelle, she adores her dogs, even though Bartholomew has been world champion and she's very proud of this. Even so, he only has the best things. He's never allowed to eat junk, and she always looks after him. And he's very, very careful who she breeds with, so the pups are healthy and she keeps an eye on them. And that's what a good breeder does. And there are a lot of good breeders out there, and there are some dreadful breeders out there. So there you go.
It's interesting, you never allude to this, Jenny, but one of the reasons for the jaw problem that Ian rightly acknowledged was one of the challenges, or was perceived as being one of the challenges with both Schroeder and Woodstock. That is just one of the characteristics that actually emerges surely when you do breeding, because that sort of intensive breeding, the byproducts genetically. I know you can argue, well, human beings have always bred from other human beings and other sort of aspects, but when you go down to that level of actual characteristics, it actually is borderline harmful in terms of the animals, presumably. And that was something which, again, I found myself being irritated by in the book, quite annoyed. And I thought, call this out. This is wrong. Maybe that's because all the dogs I've ever had were just mongrels. So there we are.
Two more books to come. No, the problem with Tibetan Spaniels is that there aren't that many of them. You can go onto the Kennel Club website and you can look and see how closely they're related. They're supposed to have tests for eyes and stuff like that. So you don't breed one recessive gene to another recessive gene. I was surprised that some breeders I talked to didn't know the difference between something that's congenital and something that's hereditary. Charlie's jaw is a bit naff, and that's because when he was born, he was pressed up against Schroeder because his mother was too small. She had four big puppies, and that meant he was born with it. It was congenital. It's not hereditary. It doesn't exist anywhere else in his line, but it does exist in some. And so nobody would breed with Charlie anyway, with our little dog Charlie anyway, because they take one look at the jaw and go, oh no, we'll get deformed puppies. No, you won't. And he's not deformed now. There you go. People need to be much more careful breeding and not breed select characteristics. So in Tibetan Spaniels, for example, the bottom jaw comes out a quarter, a half an inch. It's dreadful. It's awful. But it passes the bottom jaw test. And I think that is wrong. They should be fit for purpose. Can they catch livestock? Can they catch rodents and hold them? Our dog has came back with a live, well, a just dying field mouse when he was only 6 months old. So he's fit for purpose. It shouldn't matter.
If memory serves, Jenny, I was actually at one of those 12 dog shows with you, was I not, when we were doing a little location report? And I can actually attest to the fact that, yeah, it's a fairly intense atmosphere that you've got. I mean, more so, I was comparing it actually to my time when I was at the livestock sales in Doncaster for horses, and that, was competitive. But on the small level, yeah, in interesting times. So, Ian, given that Jenny said she obviously a cat lover, can we see you maybe actually considering getting a Tibetan Spaniel to actually sort of accompany you in future years?
I'm 80 now, Alex, so I'm not too bothered about
brisk walks all over the place.
Clint Eastwood is in his 90s. He's still sort of having these sort of house cats, is he? So it's all very important.
Yeah. There's one thing I did want to ask Jenny. The first, before you put a pen to paper, writing, Jenny, I think you probably agree with me. You've got to know your subject matter. You've got to know the people you're writing about, the age in which you're writing, the environment in which they're living, all that sort of thing. Now, when you're doing your detective books, I imagine you did quite a bit of research, but I wonder how much research you had to do for this, because you would probably have a lot of empirical knowledge anyway. You wouldn't have to sort of look things up and read a lot about the subject.
Yes, absolutely. I actually use a planning program which is designed to help dyslexics, which is called Inspiration. And I start off with a sort of flow chart, so each bit of the action follows through to the conclusion. And then underneath, you can put notes. So if I need to check something, the new Alex Hastings book, a lot of it's set in Poland in 1988. So I'm doing a lot of research on that. And I've got a whole load of notes. Instead of a group pile of books with little bits of paper sticking out of them, it's all on a single computer file and I can pull it up at any point. But I do about 6 months research for the crime books before I actually write anything. This one, I lived a lot of it, and Jem lived a lot of it, so there was less research to do.
Exactly, yeah. And it's a great relief, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you can just tell the story. It's great.
Yeah,
I'm just shocked that Jenny is using a computer, you know, for her novels. I thought you were still pen and ink, basically, over in Ireland. Surely it was, you know, quill pen and such like. So computer, outrageous. Okay, well, it has brought us neatly round, and people are wondering, where's Rob Nichols? He's on his way to Cardiff. So there we are. We may do a postscript to that in some way, shape or form. But Jessica, what is your score for Puppy Brain, please?
So I think... And as somebody who's not really a dog person, I ended up enjoying this book a lot. I'm a rodent person. I love mice. I love rats and gerbils. They're so cute. But
you love pigeons.
I love pigeons. I'm a pigeon person. They're the rats of the sky. You know, they're my thing. But I think getting to read, when we've read dog stories before for the book of the month, we've read from the perspective of dogs even. But I think that this was so different because it felt so human. And I think that Petra and Liv just won me over completely. And the puppies have my entire heart, Schroeder and Woodstock. You know, even though they wouldn't stop walking through their dishes of food and throwing it everywhere, they're still charming. So I think I'm giving this book 9 puppies out of 10.
9 puppies out of 10. Ian, what's your particular score on the door?
I think I'll give it 9 pigeons out of 10.
Wow, fantastic. We suddenly started actually sort of operating the whole systems. Because I like Peter Kerr's novel, and I probably, if I was pushed, and this is, I'd probably say I preferred Peter Kerr's novel more, but that's probably because of that. But now, of course, Jenny's not being fair because she's actually introducing... introducing a Tibetan to the actual area as well. So, you know, this is dreadful. I mean, I was going to go 8 out of 10, but now that obviously we've actually got the added factor, you know, clearly I've got to also match the score. I'll say also a 9 out of 10 for me. Okay, Jenny, I won't ask you to mark your own book because obviously it's 10 out of 10, quite clearly. Happy with that? Have Ian and Jessica done the job?
You've done a wonderful job. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
You
I appreciate
give us
you reading it and taking time, especially from a rodent person and a cat person.
So, Jessica, now is the time where, having had the joy of actually delivering the whole process, you get the joy of actually basically saying what Jenny has to read next for the next book of the month. So, Jessica, what is your recommendation for the team for the February-March book of the month?
Okay, my book recommendation would have to be A Wizard's Guide for Defensive Baking by T. Kingfisher.
A Wizard's Guide for Defensive Baking.
It's a magical book, it's a cozy book, it's a fun book.
And the author once again is?
T. Kingfisher.
T. Kingfisher. How many kingfishers out of 10 will he receive? We'll find out in the next book of the month. Keep on reading.